mental sitting in the city don't know what the city is getting. The creme de la creme of the chess world in a show with everything but Yul Brynner. Time flies, doesn't seem a minute since the Tyrolean spa had the chess bars in it. All change, don't you know that when you play at this level there's no ordinary venue. It's Iceland, or the Philippines, or Hastings, or this place.
One night in Bangkok in the world's your oyster. The bars are temples, but the pulse ain't free. You'll find a god in every golden oyster. And if you're lucky, then the god's a she.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Bowery Capital Startup Sales Podcast. I'm Mike Brown. We're on today with Russ Hedelson. He's the CEO of DocSend. We're going to talk about content effectiveness during COVID-19, some of his thoughts and thinking on it from a sales standpoint, fundraising standpoint. They obviously have a ton of data and information. Most of our listeners are familiar with them. And so, Russ, thanks so much for coming on to the show. We appreciate it.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So maybe talk to us a bit about your background. You know, what's your story? Where you kind of come from? Would be great for the listeners to understand that as a start.
Sure. Yeah. So I'm Russ Hedelson. I'm the CEO and the co-founder at DocSend. I'm originally from South Dakota, which is in the middle of nowhere. One of the few states that's not sheltering in place at this point in time. And I did not grow up with a software background or even knowing anything about technology, but I got out to Stanford and kind of got the bug for just building software and studying computer science, and just been working in a variety of tech companies since then, Microsoft, Dropbox, Trulia. And then this is my second company. The first startup was called Pursuit.com, and then we raised a seed round. It wasn't going to work. We're going to pivot. Ended up selling it to Facebook as a talent acquisition. Had a nice condensed startup experience all the way from like starting, raising, launching, failing, and getting bought as a silver lining, and then started DocSend about 7 years ago, really to solve the problem of like, why are people still sending attachments? And then we ended up building this platform for anyone in business sending documents externally to, you know, do that securely and get analytics on it and understand what's happening to them and really just have more control of them. And as a company, we're 50 people, mostly in San Francisco and remote.
Cool. And maybe just because this is a sales podcast, the predominant selling motion for you and your team, maybe how that's evolved, what you think about when you think about sales from the DocSend standpoint would be awesome to hear.
Yeah, sure. There is an irony in DocSend in that many of our customers are enterprise sales teams, and our product has a really good fit there. But we as a company have a go-to-market motion that is not enterprise sales. It's very much product-led growth. And 100% of our growth is inbound. It's, you know, 90%+ self-serve. We do have a small inside sales team, and our, you know, larger accounts are in the low hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. But we're not like chasing million-dollar contracts. It's very much a land and expand type of model, where the product spreads itself. Like what we do, like, just works really well for people. And we always say that we cater to the end user. So typically, when we win a deal in sales enablement specifically, it's because the product is easy to use, we get high adoption, there's a very short time to value and to roll the product out. But as a technology, we've always said that we're a horizontal technology that we market vertically. So we get used for fundraising, for investor relations, for customer success, for support, for M&A, for all sorts of different things. But our largest contracts are in the sales enablement vertical for sure.
Cool. And then maybe just closing on DocSend, what's sort of new and fresh for you and your team? Obviously, the business has been around for 7+ years at this point, but I'm just curious, kind of any new product releases, feature releases, things that you want to just plug before we jump in?
Oh, sure. Yeah, so our product's been in the market for about 5 years, and at the moment, a lot of people think of this as like an easy way to send and track a document, which is true, and we're great at that. And the forwarding path of that document, who's reading it, how long. And then one of the things we're working on this quarter is our deal room product, which is the kind of like sending a folder, but different, but better, but more visual. And especially for enterprise sales, you want to have everything consolidated in one spot for the buyer to make it easy for your champion to represent internally what you do and why it's, you know, unique for them. So I'm excited about a lot of the things we have come up there. We call that product spaces with that.
Cool, that's great. And then I always ask this, what is one thing that no one on this podcast is probably going to know about you?
I like swimming in the San Francisco Bay.
Oh, wow.
It's pretty fun. It's very peaceful. It is quite chilly, but you get used to it pretty quickly. And it's incredibly safe, but everyone always is impressed by that. So if you're looking for an activity where you have a really high ratio of, people are impressed, but there's no risk involved, swimming in the bay is definitely that activity.
Now, I have to ask, you're swimming the area you're swimming in is not like the open bay, right? Or is that, are you
it
actually swimming in the open
bay?
Oh, wow.
Park.
Okay.
I'm North
oh,
Beach.
Okay.
Yeah. And my wife and I are part of a swim club.
So you're not
going to
get hit by
well.
A boat or anything?
No, it's a protected part of the bay, but it isn't.
Okay.
It is in the bay.
Cool. All right. Yeah. No. Very few people, I'm sure, will know that about you. So just jumping into the topic, right? We're talking about content effectiveness. Obviously, DocSend has a ton of information on the matter. Maybe just sort of set the foundation for us. I'm curious though, just to grasp the scale of this. You know, how many millions of views do you see a month? How big, when you think of kind of numbers and data that you have at your fingertips, what can we understand from a framing standpoint? Just like how much flow do you see to be able to sort of be an authority on this topic?
Yeah, sure. So we have over 12,000 companies are customers of DocSend. It's about 30% to 40% international, and in a given month, about a million unique people will go to a DocSend link. And in terms of like the research we've done, like we did some research on sales content effectiveness, and we looked at 34 million interactions of prospects with sales material. And we're able to take things away from that. And so the scale is pretty statistically significant at this point. And we did some research on founders and fundraising, and that involved 15,000 CEOs that have used DocSend for fundraising. So it's enough that we can kind of take away trends and are pretty confident about them.
Cool. So maybe just dig in for us beyond that framing. When you synthesize all this information, what are just some of the headlines? I mean, what makes for effective content? We'll obviously get into how this is changing amidst the current crisis, but just sort of high level, the pieces you put out around this stuff, what do you tend to see as effective content?
That's a great question, because so we as a company sit at a spot where we're observing other people who are sending out documents and material and tracking it and the forwarding of it. And so like, what can we see in aggregate? And then what can we take away from that? And so you kind of have to marry up like the aggregate stats that you see with kind of anecdotal interviews and talking to customers to take away trends. But I mean, there's some, at a high level, especially in the sales use case, there's some pretty clear trends in enterprise sales. Like, one is that smart salespeople understand that there are multiple stakeholders involved, and they need to be attuned to who those people are and what they care about. And the documents that you're sending can be a nice way to make sure that you have the visibility you need to get a deal done. There's also clearly a trend where buyers, especially in this market, are just scrutinizing things in even more detail. So as a salesperson, the more tailored you can make your pitch to them, it's not like you're creating a whole new deck. It's even just like you're sending the case study that's relevant to the particular champion you have at a company and making sure it's as tailored as possible. And the more work you put in there, people are appreciative of that. And because they're scrutinizing at a higher level, the more tailored you can make it, the better chance you give yourself of success. And then the last thing is that people do read the sales material you send. Like, people actually spend time in it, but they don't spend a ton of time. They spend on average 2 minutes and 27 seconds per document that you send, which is significant, but not like hours and hours, but like they read it, so it's important.
Sure, that's helpful. When you're talking about these sort of things that work, what do you see in terms of the top performing content areas? Is it almost always a sales deck, or have you seen other things work? Like, you guys obviously have a lot of pricing data that goes on DocSend. You've got case studies from customers and prospects. I mean, I see a lot of those links flying around. So I'm curious, if you were to bucket the content channels or the content types, are there any that are more effective or less effective that you tend to see?
Yeah, there are two like bright areas that we see. The first is pricing information. You see a lot of salespeople send the deck where, you know, they have all the material up front about why you should buy, and then they have the pricing at the end. You just see people flip through everything just to get the pricing. Like, show me the pricing. That's what I want. So I guess the best practice is, like, give them the pricing. And then the smart teams that use DocSend will break out pricing such that the options are on different pages, so they can track who's spending more time reading which package. So you can get a sense for, like, where someone's leaning in terms of, like, what option they're going for. Are they pretty cost conscious? Do they, like, really want to lean into, like, going all in with you on the most expensive one, or they kind of go in the middle zone? And so we see that dynamic a lot. It's not especially effective to try to, like, put a bunch of stuff ahead of pricing to make them read it. Like, we just see them what they want to see pricing. And then the second area is that case studies are consistently the highest performing category of sales collateral. They've got an 87% completion rate on average, which is astoundingly high relative to everything else. And for any data, you know, we can debate exactly what that means, but anecdotally, from talking to people about it, or even talking to prospective buyers, what a prospective buyer wants is for the salesperson to do literally all the work for them. They want to do as little work as possible, because buying your product is, like, not really their job. Like, buying your product will hopefully make their job easier or better in some way, but the buying process is not something they get credit for. And the case study is just cutting to the chase, where it's someone like them, hopefully in the same role at a company in the same industry, a company about the same size, and why that person looks really smart for buying this, like, software or product. And so that, for them, kind of crystallizes it. They can take that internally and tell that story. And so it's story-based, and it kind of gets to the crux of your value. And so, yeah, case studies are something that everyone typically invests in, but, you know, you can't really invest too much in case studies, given how much engagement they get.
Got it. And then maybe just the opposite of that, like, are there areas that you just see as completely ineffective, or maybe ask a different way, things that sellers view as, oh, I think this will land really well with a prospect, and it just sort of doesn't at all?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. The things that, and from a DocSend perspective, the things that don't work well, we tend to not see a lot of data on, right? Because they're just not great. not work well from just talking to our own customers and prospects is a salesperson, if you just send someone a link to your website, you're not adding a ton of value. So, you know, that doesn't get a high level of engagement. Like, yes, I knew what your website was. I could go there by myself. The question is, like, how are you helping me navigate the buying process more specifically? So the more legwork we see people do, the higher engagement we see on the prospect side, which is a great sign that they are engaged and they're thinking about it and it's more likely to close.
Got it. Cool. That's super, super helpful. I wanna just in the interest of time, wanna narrow a bit on COVID-19, coronavirus, right? We obviously have this whole new world from a couple of weeks ago where everyone is working from home. You know, we are seeing a lot of prospects and buyers reprioritize. I'm just curious, thinking about it from your perspective on the front lines and reviewing some of this data. I mean, are you seeing any key changes in terms of content on the DocSend platform? Is there, interesting insights from a few weeks of looking at the data, just sort of high level? What are you kind of seeing out there?
Yeah, I mean, there are a few things that we're seeing. One, in general, it's not as apocalyptic as the news would make it out to be. Like, we saw a dip in viewing behavior By and large, people are still reading things and trying to get business done, even in a remote environment. It also really varies by vertical. So, you know, media sales has been kind of disproportionately hit, or if you're in travel or somewhere else, hospitality, like those areas have been hit pretty hard. Companies that had a really high burn rate and didn't have a lot of capital are doing layoffs. So we've all read the news about the number of layoffs, and that's tough. And some of our customers have been affected, and my heart really goes out to them to let those people go. And enterprise deals that were in the pipeline were still closing is what we saw. There's been like a few week period of people just taking stock of what's going on and how they're doing. And that's like a pause we saw in performance. So I think a lot of that pipeline or anticipated pipeline isn't split, it's just gone. It's not to say though that people aren't gonna go back and start shopping again. So if you're, an enterprise software company, you might see 30-40% hit overall like what you would have seen in Q2. But people by and large anticipate things coming back, especially if you're mission critical. And for a lot of companies, it's really pushing the envelope on, are you a need to have or a nice to have? And for a lot of salespeople, it can be unnerving if you feel like you've got a product that's on the border of that. And it just puts even more emphasis on the basics of good sales in terms of discovery, empathy for your buyer. Is now the right time? Is later the right time? How can I help you be flexible? How can I be flexible with you in terms of how we get this deal done? And then, again, the themes around making it easy for your prospect to understand why they should work with you, that's just heightened because your prospect has even more going through their head. They might be at home with like two small children. Their company might be going through layoffs. Like you might still be entirely relevant to them and it's a deal they should do, but just be cognizant that you need to be even more empathetic and really cater to them and try to make a bond and try to save them time in whatever way you can and make it obvious for them.
Got it. Have you seen, I'm just curious kind of from DocSend standpoint, have you seen an increase in sort of views and content creation because salespeople are thinking, wow, I have this audience that's now more captive, more at home? You know, you bring up the externalities like having children and many of these other things, but I'm curious if you've seen a net benefit as a result of the basically the entire nation now working from home.
Oh, for DocSend as a company or amongst our customer base?
Just amongst the customer base, I would say. Like in the mind of a seller, do you find mm-hmm. that they're uploading more content? They're thinking, oh, I now have this more captive audience because they're working from home, or is it like the opposite? I mean, I'm just curious kind of what you're seeing.
I mean, there are gains in some areas and kind of decreases in others. By and large, we saw a dip in new documents being uploaded to DocSend, which is, starting to recover as people are kind of figuring out how to shift the pitch, like how to reposition what they do. And so that is coming back. And then, yeah, for sure, in a remote environment where you can't rely on face-to-face meetings and building rapport in person, it does put more emphasis on being very clear and concise about what you do. And so, yeah, we do see more engagement with documents being sent and more documents being sent. It's up over what it was a year ago, but not dramatically so, which is probably offset by, some companies just like not being able to sell or layoffs or something else. So it's a little bit up is the answer, but it really varies by vertical.
Got it. And then what's your view? Just do you think this is a short-term change and shift, or is this kind of the new normal? I know that's a little outside of the scope of the podcast, but I'm just curious kind of what you're seeing. Maybe you've got some read on the technology buyer and how they're thinking about things. I mean, I'm just sort of curious what your views are.
Well, number one, I'm for sure not qualified to answer that question. Number two, I'm happy to offer my opinion. Just from talking to some of our customers, there's almost a generational shift happening in sales where a lot of the old guard is very much, it's got to be in person. I'm going to fly across the country, or I'm going to fly to Europe for this like one handshake deal, And like that has to happen. Without that, this deal could never possibly happen. So they're very relationship driven, the Rolodex, the longstanding. And then there's the kind of newer generation that's like, you know, the relationship can help, but it's really more about the what do you do and is it a good fit? And I think a lot of people are discovering that it's a lot of deals don't need the handshake. You know, you can compensate for not building that rapport with additional clarity around what you do for someone, and you can build that trust in other ways. And so I think people coming out of this are, I think that will be a shift. I think there'll probably be a few people who need to fly across the country for a handshake deal. And I hope that it puts more emphasis for sales teams on efficiency in a sale, and also efficiency on the buyer side to be more critical about what you're getting and where you spend your budget. And so I think across all industries, that's going to be a trend that we see coming out of this.
Sure. Do you think that, you know, there's a lot of talk with the recent move, and you're seeing this manifest itself in a lot of webinars and a lot of sort of discussions amongst the, what I'd call sort of technology sales community, of this shift back to basics and proving through, you know, your content effectiveness, your product. You talk about product-led growth as DocSend sort of value and company growth. Do you really think that this will push the industry to move back to, you know, true ROI measures, best-in-class product? I mean, we've obviously had this kind of inflation in the last couple of years through, you know, sales marketing, content marketing. I know you're obviously in the document management and the sales world, where there are tons of competitors, lots of companies. I'm just curious, kind of, do you see this sort of as a return to basics and true measures of ROI in the eyes of a prospective buyer, or what?
The short answer is yes. Yes, I do see that. And you can also see this in the capital markets and investing trends, another area where DocSend gets used a lot, where in the pre-COVID-19 world, it was a bit growth at all costs. And then WeWork kind of was a warning shot there that maybe that's not the right strategy for everybody. And then coming into this, that's just being kind of accelerated. So for the old joke is like, sure, we're losing 50 cents on every dollar, but we'll make it up with volume, you know. And it's like, well, but will you? So there has been a bit of a return to basics for companies as well, in terms of like, let's grow a little more efficiently. And with the money I'm going to invest, like, why don't we be a little more thoughtful about what we're actually going to do with that, versus kind of the craze around like, I got to get a deal and like, let's just throw more money at it and I'm sure good things will happen. And then, you know, from a sales perspective, it's kind of the same, where take stock of like, just kind of look before you leap type of thing. Like what's the ramp? Like how much can we actually sell? What's the deal size? What's our win rate? And you know, that's going to matter. So, you know, a lot of our competitors have been doing layoffs, and DocSend doesn't need to. And we've been investing for quite some time in growing efficiently, and just making sure that, you know, all the product indicators are the right ones, and that we have a go-to-market motion that is ROI positive. And, you know, for an outbound sales team, like, the ramp period can be brutal. Sometimes you don't take that into account. And then just being some companies are a little too optimistic about the payback period for a given deal or a given rep. And, you know, how many years is that? Like, everyone likes to say they have a, you know, payback period within a year, but very few companies actually do. And usually there are bright spots where, like, you had something working at first, and then there's some other areas that are more experimental. And then if you mix all those things together, it's a little bit muddled and it can look bad. And so being more cognizant of what are the bright spots in our business where we have, like, more transactional sale, we really have product market fit, and then what are the areas that are experimental, and let's be thoughtful about not putting too much there or not mixing it together with the other thing that we know that's working. And I think that in general is a healthy way for people to view their businesses. And I think for salespeople as well, just being kind of clear-eyed about what are my chances, and, you know, what me hitting my quota, like, what does that really come down to? What's in my control, and what do I really need to hustle on?
Got it. That's super helpful. This is a bit off topic, but I know you had a lot of data to inform it. a lot of entrepreneurs will listen to our podcast. Just curious, what are you seeing in terms of the fundraising markets? You know, we talked in advance of the podcast about what you're seeing kind of in the early stages, what you're seeing from sort of late stage and PE. Maybe just if you've got some color commentary, it would be wonderful for the audience to hear that right now.
Yeah, sure. Fundraising is remarkably like sales, which is kind of funny. And so is investment banking, for that matter. They just don't label themselves as salespeople, but that's effectively what they're doing. And I know a lot of people, a lot of my friends in sales, like, want to go be entrepreneurs at some point. And one of the biggest hurdles to, like, making a company is to be able to go raise money for it. And so we do have a lot of data there as well. And there's the anecdotal stuff. We've been doing surveys of VCs to figure out who's actually investing, who's just saying they're investing, like, who's done a deal without meeting face-to-face. There's kind of, like, the middle stage stuff, like A's and B's, and there's kind of like the later stage stuff. If you mix them across all buckets, the pitch deck interest has actually been up about 3.5% each week for the past 2 weeks. So people are actually investors spending more time doing things. It could be because they don't have travel time, they're stuck at home, they're definitely shopping. We've seen founders sending pitch decks down like almost 8%, which is pretty significant. So it's interesting to see that founders are not trying as much to fundraise, but investors are actually looking at things more because they have more time. Putting a little more color on that, as we talk to investors, many of them for the past few weeks have been just trying to take stock of their portfolio. Also, investors are like real people, and some of them have had some really big hits in their portfolio. They had, you know, a travel company or hospitality startup. And that just puts them in a spot where they're like not especially risk-seeking for a little while. But by and large, most people have said that they are going to start investing again in June. And at the early stage, we've already talked to a number of firms who have done deals without meeting face-to-face since this, you know, shelter-in-place started. And a couple of my friends have helped raise money successfully. You're seeing a little bit of a discount. Like, the general advice is, like, if you're going to raise a pre-seed round, the market rate before this all started would have been $400K at a $4 million cap. And now if you get an offer for $300K at a $3 million cap, the same dilution, a little bit less, 25% less money, you should probably take that deal if you need that money now. Many startups, if they can wait, are just planning to wait a month or two. From the investor side, they all have the same amount of capital they need to deploy, and they'd like to do that in the same time period. So the general thinking is that you're going to see kind of a rush of investment once there's more clarity on the larger macroeconomic climate. And people are thinking that'd be, you know, more like around the June timeframe. So early stage, not affected as much right now. Middle stage, like A's and B's, much more affected. There's a lot more pressure on understanding how is your business going to weather this? And if I put this money in, like, how are you going to use it to grow efficiently over the time period of like this economic downturn and this recession? And then later stage, like for private equity, we actually still see a lot of interest there. Again, the founders that can raise are planning to wait if they, you know, have the capital to wait. And PE firms and later stage firms are still trying to get deals done. But there's just not as much inventory on the market for them. So we'll probably see not as much happen there for a while.
Got it. That's great. Maybe just, you know, we've talked a bit about content effectiveness at a high level. We've talked a bit about sort of how a seller needs to reposition, change, think longer and harder during COVID-19. We've talked a little bit about the fundraising piece. There's one last thing that I wanted to cover, which was around account-based sales. I know you had a lot of data around this, sort of how many people are involved in deals, what you tend to see. I know we're kind of going back a little bit, but I think it's important to get in. So maybe just, you know, how you think about this new world of account-based sales, the data that DocSend has and sort of what you're seeing. And then maybe just along the same theme, are there any changes that you've seen for those that take on an account-based sales strategy, just given the current market environment?
Yeah, sure. And I think that's the thing that we're all going to have to continue to think about and reevaluate. And what does that look like? And then what are the new best practices as a salesperson that you can employ? in account-based sales. And even in a pre-COVID-19 world for enterprise sales, I mean, there's a little over like 5 to 6 people are typically involved on the buying side. And we see that in our data around, like, you have your point of contact, your champion, but then, you know, they often can't make the decision 100% on their own, or it's the CMO's end call, like they're the ultimate economic buyer, but your champion is like a couple levels below them, and you know, your champion needs to go like corral everyone. So even in a free world, you are still having to corral 5 or 6 people. That's a lot easier if you can go on site, shake people's hands, meet face to face, really get a read on like what they care about, and then use that to tailor your pitch to them. And that's in the old world a lot. That's how, you know, these account-based sales would work. Like, you can just sit down at a table and hash it out and come up with a plan, and if it works, and explain things. And it's tough now, not being able to do that as much. It's also tough because there's more pressure on budgets and things are scrutinized more closely. So the buying committees are definitely not going to get smaller in the world now and the world going forward. And as a salesperson, you're going to have even less access to information about the agendas of the people involved in the buying committee. So you're going to have to figure out ways to make real connections, to get insights about, you know, what can you do to give yourself the best chance of getting that deal done. And as you said earlier, a lot of it is back to basics. Don't be single-threaded. You got to be multi-threaded. You got to have multiple points of contact in a company. You got to be really, really good at discovery. Again, you can't just send them a link to your website. You really need to listen to them, and you need to tailor what you do to the specifics of how their company is operating and what they're going to get out of what you're selling to them. And especially for larger deals, like, every deal is going to become even more of a special snowflake. And as a salesperson, attention to detail is going to be critical. I think this puts a lot more pressure on the days of kind of order taking and how many companies can get away with having sellers that are just order taking. And things that can get pushed to self-serve will. And so that puts even more emphasis on sales really adding value and proving their worth. And I'm 100% a believer that is the thing that can happen. It just requires more emphasis on running a really tight-knit process. And, you know, if you've got like a sales engineer you're collaborating with on it, like, as a salesperson, making sure you bring in people to help you on deals, like, now is the time more than ever where it's going to take a lot of like teamwork on the selling side to prove value and to really put your best foot forward, which I think on the whole is like not a terrible thing. As a silver lining to the situation, we all wish that we weren't in the situation, but it will put some emphasis on that. And account-based sales is just going to grow as like a category and as a method of going to market that's going to be proven to be more effective.
Cool. That's great. We've ran about 40 minutes. Any final tips, tricks, thoughts as we think about content effectiveness in this sort of new market environment with COVID-19 upon us?
I think I keep in mind that people do like 2.5 minutes is the average view for sales collateral. Like, if you are working with your marketing team, push your marketing team to make it more specific if possible, and push them to make it short. Think BuzzFeed, not The Economist, in terms of material that's effective to kind of convey what you do. Keep in mind that these things get circulated inside of companies, and you're going to have to stay on top of it. And the average length for sales collateral that works is 2 to 5 pages. So if you're sending out like a 30-page deck, it's not going to be as effective as something more specific that's like 4 or 5 pages. And so these are just trends to keep in mind to the extent that you have control over what is the material, how to describe what you do, and, you know, can you help influence marketing to make things that are more effective.
Cool. Russ, thanks so much for coming onto the show. We really appreciate it.
Great. Thank you, Mike. Your massage parlors.